Right, we played a smidgen of Shang-a-Lang there in tribute to our guest today, Phil Coulter. Phil, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Tony. All the better for seeing you, and all the better for hearing Shang-a-Lang.
Yes, there's another ka-ching. Yeah. You know, there's another till going
but
for
it's
you.
It's nice
you know?
To know that it's still out there. I mean, still. You told me last time we chatted that if you wanted to make sure to get people on the dance floor, you played the Bay City Rollers. And I found that very flattering, and I've quoted it many times since.
No, as I told you, I did it on Friday night again. Shang-a-Lang, there they go.
Because that's back, I mean, that's way back in 1976.
No matter how old they are, yeah, you know.
That's very heartening to know that, it really is.
Yeah, but there are some, if you like, party classics that no DJ doing a gig would be without. I mean, you wouldn't be without Sweet Caroline by Neil Diamond,
yeah.
Or A Monkey's Tune, mm-hmm. Or Satisfaction by the Stones.
Yeah.
Or
Jugular, just straight there.
Shang-a-Lang would be another one of them, yeah. You know.
That's great to know I'm in that kind of company, I'm very flattered.
You know, if you're having one of those dodgy do's and you're going, these things aren't moving, it's just desperate, you know.
Reach for the rollers.
Yeah, get it out. Get out. It's like In Case of Glass, break the record case and pull these ones out, you know.
I love it.
Yeah. So you were talking about, I mean, do people send you songs? Young songwriters now?
Yeah, and most to be honest, I mean, the problem is that they haven't learned the craft of songwriting. You know, I mean, it's easy to call yourself a songwriter, Johnny, but I mean, if you're going to be a serious songwriter, you know, it is a craft that you have to learn. It's a craft you have to pay time at. And the big problem now is that there is no mentoring, you know, there's no nurturing of aspiring songwriters the way they would have been in my time. And that's a long time ago, fair enough, back in the 60s when I was my first contract as a songwriter with Keith Prowse Music. But the process was there that the publisher sat down and listened to your new songs and told you where you were going wrong. And you know, everybody needs that as you're an aspiring, if you're an aspiring broadcaster, you need somebody to tell you how to go about it, what you're going wrong. If you're an aspiring author, you know, you need an editor to tell you, you're taking too long to say, you know, what you want to say. Similarly, songwriting is something that, the economy of songwriting is something which is missed by a lot of kids who want to get clever and use as many chords as they possibly can, you know.
Did you have little rules, for instance, for a pop song? We need to be hitting the chorus within 30 seconds, that kind of thing?
You know, the ultimate time, when I was writing the Bay City Rollers and Kenny and Slick and that run of all that Teeny Bopper stuff, the peak time, the ultimate time for your record was 2 minutes and 45 seconds. If you could get your business done in 2 minutes and 45 seconds, that was it. So for a start off, You never just, your intro should never be dead air. It shouldn't be just 4 bars of vamping. It has to be something that's going to be, you know, be catch your ear. So that Shang-a-Lang thing, a ding, 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 you know, or congratulations, dun, 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 boom, 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 boom. Pop it on the string. Pop, 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 chip, pop, chip, pop, chip, pop. Those are things that are ear hooks, you know. You don't just go like 4 bars of vamping a chord. And if you've only got 2 minutes and 45 seconds to work with, Johnny, you know, Every second got a count.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're right, there was a peak. The key change usually had to come about like 2.5 minutes, so you had another 15 seconds to get out on the last chorus. For the Rollers, we did a lot of 2/3 of the way through, there'd be a kind of what we called a switch out. It would just be the drums and the hand claps, that sort of stuff. But basically, it was like keep it uncomplicated, get it as hooky as you can, and make it danceable.
Was it it's a thing that has struck me, but only because I've been DJing around nightclubs for decades, and there are some great songs, and I'm thinking to myself, if only you'd made it a bit more danceable, had a bit more of a steady beat in it, you would have had a bigger hit. Then, of course, then DJs go and remix these things and do, but maybe the writer should have done. But again, is the test, you know, you and I were talking, is the test the man driving the lorry by something he can whistle? After hearing it once, kind of
if you're embarking, listen, there are different kinds of songwriters. You know, if you want to be like the singer-songwriter and writing those very kind of poignant songs, those kind of Call the Samaritans kind of songs, you know, that's your privilege if you want to do that. But if you want to be a commercial songwriter, as I was aspiring to be a songwriter for hire, writing songs to be recorded and sung by other recording artists, then you got to know who your audience are. You got to know exactly who you're hoping to pitch your songs to and what audience you're trying to reach. And there's no point in being smart, no point in being clever. It's not a time to prove how much music you know or how many chords you know. It's a time to just get on with your business.
Yeah. When you were writing for the Rollers and Slick, were you aware of just how young the audience was? It was basically sort of 15-year-old girls and maybe younger, wasn't it? Yeah.
Younger. It slowly dawned on record company executives, Johnny, who'd comfortably believed that the people buying singles were 16, 17, 18. Mm-hmm. And then the realization dawned, wait a minute, that kind of 10, 11, and 12.
Yeah.
The teeny bopper, this was the beginning of the teeny bopper revolution. And it dawned on me that the acts that were feeding those teeny boppers were American acts largely. You know, it was the Partridge Family or David Cassidy or this, that, and the other. There was no homegrown act that was geared specifically at that audience, hence the Bay City Rollers.
Yeah. Did you break your own rules then if you were writing for someone, I mean, like Elvis? Did you?
Different kind of song.
Yeah, tailor it differently.
Absolutely. Well, but that song wasn't specifically written for Elvis. I mean, it's one of my proud boasts that I'm the only non-American to have written a hit single for Elvis Presley. And I initially wrote the song for Richard Harris, the actor. And we had a hit with it in the States. That's how Presley picked up on it. And it wasn't until maybe 18 months later that he recorded and released it. But, you know, to this day, when I would hear it on the radio driving along and hear Presley singing My Boy, it still gives me a tingle.
But that's I mean, massive thing to have on anybody's CV. And as you say, I didn't realise that. You're the only non-American to write a hit for him.
Yeah.
Terry Twinkle.
Well, my first ever.
Did you write that or did you arrange it? I know you were involved.
It.
Yeah,
I arranged it. Yeah, and it was made for £100. Made for £100 in...
Now, hold on. £100 then was money.
1965, I suppose. In a little demo studio in Denmark Street, Tin Pan Alley. Phil Solomon, the man that I was working for, said, right, Twinkle was this girl who actually was hanging around with one of the Bachelors. You remember the Bachelors?
Yeah.
Phil Solomon was manager of the Bachelors. So the guy, whichever one of the Bachelors, the youngest one of the Bachelors, I think it was Deck, was kind of knocking about with this Twinkle. And so he was giving Solomon a lot of kind of heartache. And Solomon said to me, get her into the studio and see what songs she's got. So she had a collection of songs that didn't make any sense. But one of them was this death song called Terry.
Yeah.
So I kind of beat it into shape. And we went into the studio. Do you know what, Johnny? We recorded that on two-track.
Two-track?
Stereo. Twinkle's voice on one of the tracks and the band on the other track. That was before multi-tracks, before four-track, eight-track, 16-track.
For the benefit of those listening, that's primitive. I mean, it's beyond primitive. You know, compared to today's techniques.
The band, do you want to hear who the band were? No. The band was John Baldwin, who since became John Paul Jones, bass player in Zeppelin, was the bass player. John McLaughlin of the Mahavishnu Orchestra was playing rhythm guitar. A fellow called Big Jim Sullivan was playing lead guitar. Bobby Graham, who played on the early Beatles records, was playing drums. They were the kind of session guys about Denmark Street.
And I did read one report that Jimmy Page played guitar on
Jimmy Page was on that too.
Jimmy,
I forgot about Jimmy. Yeah.
Listen, I've got it lined up. Just let people hear a bit of this.
Yeah.
The older listeners will remember this, of course. Terry Twinkle.
He said to me he wanted to be near to me. He said he never wanted to be out of my sight. But it's too late to give this boy my love tonight. He's waiting at the gate of heaven for me, Terry. He said to me he wanted to be close by my side. We had a quarrel, I was untrue on the night he died. And it's too late to tell this boy how great he was. Please wait at the gate of heaven for me, Terry.
Yeah, Twinkle and Terry. It's a very spooky kind of production, you know, that sort of it's spooky keyboard motif.
Yeah,
but in the
background playing that spooky keyboard.
Were you playing that?
It was a little Farfisa organ. Yeah, I remembered well. And on the piano was a guy called Mike O'Neill, was from Liverpool. He recorded under the name of Nero and the Gladiators. Did a few instrumental records. But you know, it was fun back then, John. It was really fun. You know, we had there wasn't the same pressure. You know, it wasn't the same pressure. I mean, as I say, Solomon said, take her in and make a record with her. And that was the record that ensued for £100.
For £100. It was a hit everywhere.
It was a big hit, yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. And again, she had another couple of hits after that, didn't she? Golden Lights was one.
That was another one. I made that as well. Yeah,
you did that as well.
There's a great story about that. I thought for the second record, now we'll push the boat out a little. I think I maybe got £150 to make the follow-up, I thought. And I was getting carried away by my Phil Spector fantasies back then. I thought, what would be great on this would be Timps, you know, boom, boom.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. The problem was, the door going into the recording studio wasn't big enough to get the Timps in. Should I not leave the studio, Johnny? It's absolutely true. So the percussion player actually had the Timps set up in the reception area. The street was out there, the front door was there, and your man is here with the Timps with a pair of headphones, and that's where Golden Lights, the Timps and Golden Lights were
recorded. Brilliant. I love hearing stories like that.
Totally
about,
true.
You know, that's terrific. Well, listen, you're in to tell us about the big gig, of course, that you're doing with the Ulster Orchestra. And hold on, the special guests, the priests, Moya Brennan, Ralph McTell, Damien McGinty, Codetta. That's going to be brilliant. At the venue, up in your hometown, 14th and 15th. That's some lineup you pulled together.
It is. Well, every one of those will be headliners in their own right.
Oh, yeah.
But the significant thing is, Johnny, they asked me to do this show called Phil Coulter and Friends. Well, I don't need to tell you that the term friends in our business covers a multitude. You know,
oh, yes.
It could be somebody you met last night, you know. And if he was important, then he's your friend this morning, you know. But those, they all are. I mean, they're all people that I have great affection for, great respect for, and whom I know a long time. Ralph McTell's been a pal of mine for 40-something years.
Yeah.
And has been a musical hero as well. You know, I think The Streets of London is a classic song. And here's the thing on the gig, what I'm really looking forward to as a music fan, a classic song like The Streets of London being sung by the guy who wrote it, the guy who created it. Equally so, Harry's Game by Clannad, to hear Moya Brennan singing Harry's Game, accompanied by a symphony orchestra and a 30-piece choir. It's going to be magical.
Terrific.
Yeah. It'll be never to be repeated. Those two nights are going to be very, very special.
So are you running through? I mean, you've so much material. What kind of stuff are you playing from your own back catalogue?
On that?
Yeah.
Everything from,
Is it the Tranquility pieces, maybe?
Bit of that. And each of the guests are all singing one of my songs as well.
Yeah.
So, Frank, the priests are singing a song called Remember Me, Recuerda Me, which is a song that's now established itself in that kind of classical crossover repertoire. It was recorded just about 6 months ago by Jose Carreras. McGinty is singing the Michael Bublé, Cry Me a River, and another song of mine. It's sort of a whole mix of stuff, but a lot of the Coulter catalogue is going to be there. I wouldn't blow the opportunity, Johnny, to get some of my own
certainly. Why not? Well, listen, Phil, thanks for coming in. Really appreciate it. The new CD, there's a four-track on this. Is this a radio promo or is it a new single?
The single, because the new song that I've written for City of Culture is Bright Brand New Day.
So
that was the occasion. That was the tension was to go to the studio, record it as a kind of time capsule thing, you know. The Town I Love So Well was 40 years ago. This is now about a new city. Derry's in a very different place now.
Yeah.
So Bright Brand New Day was the focal point. But on there, I've put like The Town I Love So Well, plus
Scorn Not a Simplicity, beautiful song. Love that. So listen, the new single, we're going to play this, Bright Brand New Day. And it's all about, of course, Derry, Londonderry, City of Culture celebrations.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, so have a listen to this.
A fresh breeze blowing through the city tonight as the sun sets over Sheriff's Mountain. Could it be that we might be winning? There's a sense of a new beginning from Craigan to the waterside. And there's a new moon rising over Derry tonight. Like a sign, like a promise for tomorrow. Though the memories will still remind us of days that are all behind us, the future is learning from the past. There's a bright, brand new day that's coming. Step out of the darkness and stand here in the light. There's a bright, brand new day that's coming. May all of our dreams take flight. Sing it out, sing it clear, sing it so the world can hear. It's a bright, brand new day. There's a high tide running on the river tonight. There are high hopes burning deep inside us, that together we'll keep on growing, as the foil will just keep on flowing between us, past Clooney and Kilmore. And there's a new dawn over Londonderry today. Nevermore can our history divide us, for the planets are all aligning and the future is brightly shining for Derry. Our time has come at last. There's a bright brand new day that's coming. Step out of the darkness and stand here in the light. There's a bright, brand new day that's coming. May all of our dreams take flight. Sing it out, sing it clear, sing it so the world can hear. It's a bright, brand new day.
Another stirring piece of music there. Bright brand new day.
Thank Phil. You, John.
Yeah. How's it being received in your hometown?
I was up in Derry a couple of weeks ago. There was a peace and reconciliation, interdenominational sort of rally in the Guildhall Square. There was thousands upon thousands of people there. And Martin Luther King was the main speaker. You know, son of
yes.
I Had a Dream. And the whole proceedings finished with a rendition of A Bright Brand New Day, with the choir on stage and whatever, and it was spine tingling really, just to kind of get the reaction from the people. I had unveiled it first at the Sons and Daughters concert, which kicked off the whole City of Culture year, where everybody from Derry that was in the game, the Snow Patrol boys and Undertones and Dana and Nadine Coyle, we all went back to perform at that. That's the first time that I played it, and I got a standing ovation that night, and there was tears everywhere. I mean, even the big security guy who was leading me off stage afterwards, was tears running down his cheeks. So, you know, you made that comment a bit. When a song touches people like that, that's a real privilege, and I never take it for granted. It's someone I appreciate very much.
Yeah, no, it is terrific. Well, listen, Phil, again, thank you for coming in. The big gig, what is it, 14th and 15th of June at the venue?
14th yeah. and 15th, magnificent venue, 2,500-seater, Ulster Orchestra, and that lineup of people. It's going to be, I mean, for me, it's a kind of high point in my life and my career. You know, I may never do something like this again. Certainly not in Derry. You don't get the Ulster Orchestra. It's, you know, it's not exactly what is the idea of a wee band. You know, there's a lot of guys there. So to get the Ulster Orchestra for two nights and all of that. Each one of those guests brings something new to the party. They're all different kinds of performers, but they're all great. So it's going to be a never-to-be-repeated occasion, I would think, John.
Yeah, it'll be terrific. Well, we're going to play out on the song that Elvis had a hit with, okay?
That'll do.
My boy. Thanks, Phil.
My pleasure, Johnny. Good to see you again.
You're sleeping, son, I know, but really this can't wait. I wanted to explain before it gets too late. For your mother and me, love has finally died. This is no happy home, but God knows how I tried. Stay because of you, my boy. I know it's hard to understand. Why did we ever start? We're more like strangers now, each acting out of part. I have laughed, I have cried, I've lost every game, taking all I can take, but I'll stay here just the same. Because you're all I
I stay because of you, my boy. Sleep on, you haven't heard a word. Perhaps it's just as well. Why spoil your little dreams? Why put you through the hell? Life is no fairy tale, and one day you will know. But now you're just a child, I'll stay here and watch you grow. I stay because of you, my boy. Yeah, because you're all I have, my boy. You are my life, my pride, my joy. And if I stay, I stay because of you, my boy.
Elvis, my boy. Just another cracking tune from the pen of Phil Coulter. And he's the only non-American ever to have written a hit for the King.